I went to this village on Sunday where Eric is pastor, the Presbyterian church there. And as we drove up, all the children of the community rushed out to greet us when we got out of the car. And we went to the church, which was not yet finished building, so we met in one of the elders' homes. People sat on the floor, men separated from women, and beautiful children. And the service was held. The singing was unforgettable. And they all knew. And the most unforgettable experience in terms of a psalm was Psalm 18 for me, because they sang it. And it's not a short psalm. If you look at it, well, you listened to it last night, too. Psalm 18 is a powerful psalm for encouraging beleaguered believers in Pakistan. And then on another occasion, I heard it in a youth group meeting where there are over 100 youth who were singing that night. And the way they sang that song, you can see how it nourishes their faith and encourages them. And then there was another conference up in the seminary. Eric is a graduate of the Presbyterian Seminary in Gujranwala, which another part of Pakistan. And throughout those few days that I was with him, it was amazing. It was really unforgettable. Especially, this is what I want to say, because so many countries that I've gone to, Western hymns have gone before, so I can sing with them, because they all know Blessed Assurance in Africa or in countries in Asia. Many of the songs have been imported or exported from the West and have been adopted. Not so in this area of Pakistan. That was the unique part of my discovery there, how the indigenous music has taken root in those communities. And so while there is some back and forth, the people sing from their heart, in their heart language, in their heart songs, and that includes the psalms, which is quite a story. That's all I'm going to say for starters. And Eric, lead us.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today again for this wonderful time with all of you. It's a two-way process. You know, we learned a lot here when we were here and when the family was there, so it's kind of exchange program. And another thing which you can see on your front page note that's in a blog, it's the last point about denominational church, Christian established villages. Most of the time when you heard about Pakistan through news, which is only a one-sided picture or a half or distorted picture, no, I'm not saying that it's not true, but this is half picture. Mostly, how many of you have ever heard about Pakistan before? Great. So, what do you know about Pakistan? Muslim country, that's fine. Anybody else?
Used to be part of India.
It was part of India, great.
Urdu is spoken there.
Pardon me?
Urdu is spoken there.
Urdu? Yes, Urdu language, that's national language. Great. Okay.
It's a breeding ground for terrorism.
That's it. That's another point. Strong point. It's a safe haven or kind of a breeding point for Islamic terrorism. Global terrorism network is all rooted back into that region. So you can understand from which background we as a church not only striving, but we are thriving. And that's a powerful testimony. So, and the important thing that our brother said, there's 97% Muslims. Christians and other minorities are 3%, and the Christians are the largest minority with 2.5 or 2.6 percentage. It means Pakistan population is now 190 million, more than 190 million. And Karachi city, where we three are belong to, it's one of the category of the first five world's biggest highly populated cities. Karachi city. So
10 million.
Yeah, almost more than
20 million.
Yeah, almost. Yeah. And so the perception which I have heard and when I met from here, lots of friends, is there any Christian in Pakistan? Is there any Christian? People don't know that Christianity is even before the creation of Pakistan. Pakistan created and separated from India in 1947. But Christian work and Christian churches and the missions, they were in Pakistan since 1850s. As you can read in this article, the history of Punjabi Psalm and the Book of Psalm, that they have been translated right at the end of the 20th century. So the missionary work started through denominational, we can say, the Christian established villages along with ecumenical city neighborhoods for protection, encouragement and practicing faith. Also Christian schools, hospitals and seminaries are there. Gujranwala Theological Seminary, Presbyterian Seminary, where I graduated 12 years ago, that is 130 years old, Presbyterian Seminary in that region. Christian schools, hospital, and seminaries. So this is the brief background about Christians in Pakistan. So how we can relate it to an across cultural. So first of all, I would like to share with you how I can see culture here. As a seminary student here right now in Calvin Theological Seminary, I ate a lot of pie. Every time that you go, pie is there. American pie. American loves pie. So, how it relates? So, pie, I can say that P for me is stand for privacy and personal. That's North American or Western culture, if I relate properly. I stand for independent and independent identity, who I am. Most of the worship song you heard are saying, I love you, I focus, I hop, I everything, iPhone, whatever you call, everything's focused to I, not we. So everything focused on I. And then E is efficiency, everything properly, precise, job done at a time. So, you know, this efficiency you need here. And then egocentric as well. So this is a kind of a American culture compared to Asian rice. Asians love to eat rice. So how we can relate with this cross-culturally? So R stand for relational. Nothing is I. Everything is we. You can't stand alone. You can't survive alone. You can't say that I want this, no, or I need this, not at all. What is suitable for we? That's the main thing. And then very religious. We are living in, you can understand, living in a 97% Islamic country. I will give you a few examples in a couple of more slides, that how we soak, we breathe, we sleep, and we wake up with religious calls. So that's the kind of a culture. Number two, our identity is not based upon personal individualism. It's based on group, community, unit of family. C, most communal, and in that region you enter time free zone. You don't worry about what time is started and what time is ending. You enjoy event. You live and breathe in that event. No starting point and no ending point. You just live there. And then E is it's ethnic oriented, like a clan, tribe, or a caste system is important. People honor that and people follow that. Systems, event oriented, making an event out of the ordinary. So I can give you one example. If you're on a highway, if two trucks are passing, and for some reason they both truck drivers know each other, they will stop two-way traffic just for asking hello, hi, and about family and other people. There is a long line behind them. People are honking, people are doing, they don't worry about them. They are just asking, how's family, how are you doing, how's your job, everything is good, who's married, who's not married, who died, who's passed away. So they get each and every data right on the highway. So this is kind of a culture. So we are living in a public piety and a public religious system. As I told you before, we wake up early in the morning with a prayer call from a mosque minaret with a huge loudspeaker, and we have to hear this 5 times a day. So 5 times a day you remind yourself that you are living in an Islamic country. Without any noise, complain of any noise pollution, you can't do or say anything against calls of minarets. And it depends, suppose that I can relate it with a different denomination. If you have a 6 denomination churches right in the same street, and they each and everybody have a loudspeaker on their minaret, what you will hear? At the same time, with a difference of 30 seconds or 1 minute, you are listening different speakers' call and different prayer call from different sectarian mosques. And you can imagine sometimes you can't understand who's saying what. 5 times a day. Then, reverence of the book is very important. As a people of the book, in the according to Islamic and the Quranic version, in Pakistan we have a blasphemy law that's against, if you don't treat properly the book of Quran, the Islamic holy book. And if anybody been accused or blamed for desecrating or burning page or not treating properly, you will be in a situation. You could be imprisoned if somebody reported to police, or if somebody reported to the local mosque cleric that this Christian or this person has not revered the book and they desecrated by putting down or something. So it's a blasphemy law against even the book of Quran. Now you can imagine, grown up in that culture, when we see here Bibles lying on a floor and Bibles under the seats, we can't imagine that. Even I'm trying to integrating this culture now, but still I confuse and I get disturbed when I see Bible on a floor or somewhere else treating lightly. I just try to pick it up and put somewhere, you know, on my face. So we live in that culture of the reverence of the book. Then we observe Lent properly and a fasting, because of Islamic culture also. Those who know Islamic background, there is a 30 days of month of Ramadan. It's a fasting month in Islamic, according to Islamic calendar. So they observe for 30 days, and then it's followed with the 3 days festival of Eid, Eid al-Fitr, that's their festival. And during that 30 days, all public places, food, restaurant, drinking, everything's closed. You can't eat or drink publicly during that month. And if you tried and you've been caught up, you will spend your night in under the cell or inside a jail. So that's why with this pressure, when Lent came, so Christians observe these 40 days Lent properly. And we don't try to do that in a, because Islamic fasting day is starting from one evening, following Jewish style, one morning, early in the morning. Yes, they have a morning sahri. They eat till the sun rise and till the sunset. They can't eat. So they eat in the night, and the whole day they don't eat or drink anything. So that's, in this way, Christians also try to follow the fasting day of 24 hours from one evening till next evening. And that's a common regular practice. Our brother Samuel is here. He's a chairman of the largest Pentecostal church background, and he can tell you one of the practice about when your church and you have a prayer meeting overnight and a midnight also, and also they have a fasting day as well. Yeah, can you tell us something about how you are practicing this?
Yes, about a year ago, we felt the need for our city that we needed to start praying just for our city, you know, what it was going through and all the terrorism and all the bad things were happening in the city. There was nobody doing anything for it. Nobody was praying, nobody was standing up. So we started doing that last year, where we would meet every other Friday night, and we would pray all night long. And that was twice a month. So we started doing that, and then before the meeting, the prayer meeting, we would fast during the daytime. And then in the evening, we would get together, and we would, you know, break our fast, have some food, and then we would pray. So we've done that for about a year now. So now we are seeing spiritually gradual change that is happening in our city. The murder rate have gone down, terrorist activities have considerably gone down, security have increased. So we're seeing a change now. So, you know, that is one good thing that is happening in our city.
Yeah, as you know, being a Christian living in Pakistan is not an easy work, because government-supported religious extremists are working, because their funding came back from different Middle Eastern countries. Then the Islamic seminaries, they are promoting religious hatred. Our whole educational curriculum on a national level under the Federal Education Board, that's filled with the hatred against non-Muslims, including Christian and Hindus. So you can understand, when you are living in 97% people, those are Muslim, and they have been grown up in their schools, in their houses, in their Islamic schools, with against the hatred against the non-Muslims. So, and the other side, Christian community, they don't have a political power, they don't have a social power, they don't have a voice, and so where else they go? They have only one hope, and only one platform, and only one place to go, and that is church. To call and lament God directly to intervene. So you can see that how we live by faith. And cross-culturally, if you see here, you have a law enforcement, you have a constitution actively working, and then you know, properly dealt with the racism or sometime with the religious hatred you can't experience. Might be there are some racial issues, but not on a religion basis. So that's entirely different picture. So 30 days of Ramadan, we follow, so all together 30 days with the Muslims and 40 days with our Christian calendar. How many days?
70
days in a year. So you can understand how we are doing religiously. So the religious piety, public piety is very important. Then head covering is very important. Five times a day, even if you are a Christian or a Muslim, whoever you are, most of the time women cover their head. It's a cultural thing also, but it's also that culture being shaped by the religious practices. Because five times a day, when you hear a mosque, a call of prayer from a mosque, so if women are in a market, or whoever you are a Christian, or you are a Muslim, or a Hindu, whatever, when you hear a call as a reverence, they need to cover their head. Even in the public places also, women should be covered their heads. This is one verse actually, I think, 1 Corinthians 11. I don't know well, when Paul was in Corinthians, there was no Islam and no Muslim, but he talked about that culture also, that judge for yourself, is it proper for a woman to pray to God with her head uncovered, ? So I'm talking about my culture, how we do. I know in this culture, it's out of question. Okay, then worship practices, and especially, so now you have an idea actually how we are living and what we are breathing and how we are dealing with that public piety and living in that, how it influences our Christian worship. There is another irony, I can say that, in Pakistan, as you know, it was part of India before 1947, so we are living in Islamic culture, but we are also influenced by Indian culture through media. Because the whole media, entertainment, especially entertainment industry, that is dominant by Bollywood. Bollywood is Indian version of Hollywood. So that film industry swept out all South, East, and West Asia. I met here Indonesian girls, I met here a couple of Malaysian students, and some other, and they know Indian film song in our language. They know the superstar celebrities from Bollywood, even in Malaysia and in Indonesia. So the whole film industry, that same influence on our own Pakistani Christian identity also. So we are hard pressed from both sides, living in neighborhood by the Muslims and in our home screen influenced by Indian and Hindu culture. So it's hard to keep our identity separate, but somehow we are doing in that. And then there is a blasphemy law in Pakistan, there is anti-conversion law, there is anti-proselytism law, there is you cannot evangelize to any Muslim. The punishment is very severe. And then again, those who know Muslim background, if any Muslim left his faith, it will be called murtad. That's an Arabic word. Murtad means he is under the punish of beheading if he leave Islam as a Muslim professing person. So that's why we are very curious how to deal with that. So and then from last couple of years, there is a lot of persecution against minorities. Even I think last Friday, there was another sectarian bomb blast in another Muslim mosque, a small sect inside the Muslim faith, and more than 50 people have been killed through a suicide bomber. That's Friday, and that from last couple of 3 months, it's a huge attack on Christians and on a small brief sectarian people. So how we do that? How worship help us to? Number one, we respond in this persecution in Psalms. Psalm is the basic book which helps us. It's in our indigenous language. It's been composed in our own language, own indigenous music, as Dr. Amri shared with you. Our musical heritage is so deep and strong that Western influence was not succeeded in that region. That's our own identity. How many were you there last night? Okay, a couple of you. So you have seen that how that was an entirely classical presentation. That was not a general presentation. So you can sing that song easily. The direct go from, "O Lord, may your kingdom come." But we actually did in a proper classical way. So what are the, how we do that? Number one, from last 2 years, there have been more than 4 or 5 biggest attacks on Christians. Christian colonies being attacked, Christian villages being attacked, Christian churches being attacked and vandalized, and the mob just come. I don't know how and where they come. But once it's announced in the mosque, and then the huge people, more than sometime 100 and 1,000 people come, and then they will just attack on a Christian colony or anything. So people only protest and pray through Psalms. We protest against blasphemy. We protest against this killing of Christians. We protest against discrimination law. So all this going on through our worship services. And another strong point is that we Christians, we in living in Pakistan under the pressure of severe persecution, extremism, churches are united. There isn't, you can't say that Roman Catholic Church is separate and Anglicans are separate or Presbyterian are separate and Pentecostals are separate. Now, there is external persecution unite the church internally. So denominational bondages are not much important. So that's also a power of a persecution also that unites church. Then we have other opportunity, as I have told, that how you witness in that scenario where you are not allowed to evangelize. Then our different Christian calendar-based practices help us to give public witness without preaching and without using a Bible or a theological debate or apologetically approach. How you do that? Number one, from last couple of years or a decade, Christian colonies, as you have read over there, mostly Christians try to live together in a villages, Christian village, in a urban city or a neighborhood Christian name. All Christians try to live together in a colonies. Different reason, but main reason is that to share their faith, and then for a security and a protection, try to live together. So in these areas, those we have with the huge Muslim neighborhood, during Christmas season, now they are trying to make manger scene. They create artistic work of manger scene on a street, on a corners, so everybody could see what is this. So this is another level of a witness. And then in the churches, we have a night prayer services, and most of the time Christmas service until midnight. And also there are a couple of other services we do mostly during midnight. And this lighting, we have got this idea from Western churches also to put lights. And then you can see that government officials involved in that moment, because huge community try to attend church, and government provides security. That might be if any extremist group or somebody could not attack to them. So sometimes we have a guard. And then Palm Sunday is also one of the another powerful pageant which we do in a street. And you can see that people come like they create a proper story in a gospel. They take branches, and then a full procession, singing and dancing and music and all together, children, women, old, young, all together in a procession, and they sing and they celebrate Palm Sunday also in a public places. Then Easter Vigil is very important also. Most of the churches, they try to observe and celebrate early morning sunrise service. That's another tradition. Most of the Easter night and the Saturday night, people try to sleep early, or most of the time they don't sleep. In the morning, they've been encouraged to get their candles and wear white dress as a sign of angels when they appeared on the grave, and they told these women that Jesus is not here, he has risen. So they try to imitate that story. White dress, candles, and you can imagine if a couple of hundred people are coming together early in the morning in the Muslim neighborhood and they are singing with the candles, how it looked like. So that's another powerful practice which we do. So worship and praise. Praise and especially music. Music is very important. We are generally a musical nation. Our folk genre, our classical, our common people song, film song, and now in the modern song, they are very important. And especially this practice of this public gathering, this is very very old. There is a Sialkot convention. Sialkot is a small city in Pakistan, famous for its surgical instruments and their sports goods they made there. But the missionary work started in Sialkot through North American Presbyterians and some other Anglican and Scottish Presbyterians in 1850s. And then for the renewal and for the education of the local pastor, they started a conference in 1904. And this traditional convention is still carry on even after 100 years. I have been chanced to be a worship leader when I was a seminary student, to lead that convention for 3 years during my seminary season. I would like to show you some clips from that last year convention.
Thank you.
know if you're going to say this, Eric, but 25,000 people approximately come the last week of September yet today to this convention. It's a week long.
And it's still carry on. It's a traditional convention. Nothing changed. Even they don't provide people facilities, even they can do, the organizing committee, but they don't do. I don't know why. So, yeah. We did that one. Yeah, okay. So singing and clapping and dancing and shouting, and that's a normal public convention type, but in a Sunday services, we have a different tradition as well. So, how we can use worship, how worship help us to engage with the mission? That's an important question. While living in that restricted country and with constitutional boundaries, how can we do that? So, the government, we have different options to use that properly. Like, these are three pictures which I have chosen to show you that how Christmas celebration becomes a mission tool, not only to local level, but to the highly officials to involve them. This picture, this person is a current Prime Minister of Pakistan. And he is celebrating Christmas with the Christian leaders and the Christian community, right, in a Christian area. So Prime Minister of Pakistan is there celebrating Christmas as a Muslim. He was with a Roman Catholic bishop and Anglican bishop, they both together with the former President of Pakistan, celebrating Christmas. And these are some Islamic leaders with another head of the mainstream political party in the northwestern tribal belt with the Afghanistan border. They are there to celebrate Christmas. So these festivals become a channel sometimes to do and to share witness with them. And okay, let me give you one taste of a psalm which we sing in Pakistan. If you turn your notes, it's Psalm 51 with this picture. And this is Psalm 51. I will sing, because Book of Psalm being translated in Punjabi language, so I would like to sing first line in Punjabi, and then you will follow this. Dr. Emily will help us lead. That is, God on me have mercy, blot out my transgressions in your great compassion. So, Dr. Emily, you can lead us. So, I will sing first Punjabi line, and then you can take the same melody, not in Punjabi, but in English. So in this way, you are not only learning a raga, but also a melody from Pakistan, original melody. We only translated lyrics from the Book of Psalm, but the melody is original from Pakistani indigenous music.
Fazal naale
Sing verse 4, surely, apparently, can you read it?
Surely I was sinful from my time of conception, teach me truth and wisdom in my inmost being, God only have
what's been happening since Eric's moved to Grand Rapids and has been studying here. Because Eric did not grow up with this kind of notation. So he sings from sheer memory hundreds of songs. So sometimes he comes over and we take out music paper and I jot them down and we work on the English translation. So there's a growing repertoire, which you can, if you go to the Calvin website and type in Eric Sarwar, you'll find articles about this project of trying to make available some of these songs.
Okay, so can you sing first line in a Punjabi language? I would like you to learn one phrase in Punjabi also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this first line is, if you read that, is number one is Punjabi, which is written Fazal Nal. Can you repeat? Arab. Wonderful. Fazal Nal. Ay-Rab Baksh Guna Sab Mere. Wonderful. I think that's more than enough for you. Okay. Yeah, so we will sing that line only, one line. Okay. So you can follow me. Yeah.
Fazal Nal Ay-Rab.
Yeah, you can repeat after me. Yeah, so no chance for mistake then.
Fazal Nal Ay-Rab. Fazal Nal Ay-Rab.
Wonderful.
Baksh Guna Sab Mere. Baksh Guna Sab Mere. Mangun Fazal
Wonderful! Wow! Clap for yourself! Wow! Round of applause! Great! So now you have learned one Punjabi Psalm 51 from Pakistan. Okay, great. So another thing is using worship in a mission. If we read our mission approaches in the colonial era and in the great century, missionaries mostly use social services like building hospitals and schools, and also trying to bring through debate and through dialogue and through apologetically approach to reach out. When modern mission agencies came out, like OM Team or a Campus Crusade or a couple of others, they tried to go through with a tract distributing and some Bible distributing, showing Jesus movie in the campus approach. And so we thought, actually, how can we enter in that region and that our community and in our neighborhood without involving and engaging with any religious bars, no? That they may not think that we are trying to evangelizing. And so we worked upon that, and as a researcher and as a student of music, I realized that there is a channel which we can use. appropriately in our culture. Because as a student of music and then working on a music in a cultural way, I worked as a music teacher for 9 years in a big music school, girls' Muslim music school. As a 9 year, I worked as a teacher. Then I had a chance to work with the prisoners in a juvenile prison and then also with the central prison of Karachi. Then we have a chance to work with the Muslim artists also on a different level. Nigel has Nigel is a student of the National Academy of Performing Art in Karachi, Pakistan. Mostly Muslims deal that. And Nigel has also a chance to work in a mainstream media as a voiceover artist. And then also, commercial ad? Mm. Yeah, as a vocalist, as a commercial ad in a mainstream, with a mainstream and a cooperative products in Pakistan. So, Nigel, can you share one or two experiences did you have with working with the Muslims? And recently he has just finished his first album as a gospel singer, and most of the videographer and the editors, they were all Muslims who worked on gospel songs. So that's interesting that how this channel, which has never been approached before, we are using now that channel to reach out and to engage with Muslims. Can you share anything? How was your experience working with the Muslim crew for your gospel and Christian songs?
My experience was really good. And in my album, there is Psalm 1. And because I'm a singer, so I can't imagine on that. Like, I can't make pictures or like what a videographer or video director can see. So that director, he's a Muslim guy. He told me that, are you talking about the book of David? Yeah. So I said, yes. So he told me the background of David according to the Islam. And he had written the story about that, so he would take me to the mountains and all those places with all the birds, animals there. So he wanted to create that environment in that song. So the album is not even completed, the video. Two videos are remaining just because the reason he had given me the big budget for that. Because he needs to shoot that song for more than 4 or 5 places.
And yeah, so this these are irregular approaches, and these are totally our own indigenous avenues and channels which we find out how to engage, rather than somebody foreign mission can told us you do this, 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 this.
And one more thing, that Muslim guy used to charge more than like 100,000 rupees for one video for his direction, and he hadn't charged me anything. I do remember that. During the third day of my shoot, he had paid for the 10 minutes. And the recent video you can check on YouTube and other things, I had recently released a song for Christmas. And the total budget was 15,000 rupees, and I had only paid 10,000. That director had paid 5,000 rupees.
And he's a Muslim?
He's a Muslim guy.
That's interesting, that how your cultural connection work to deal and to engage with that. So I work on that, and the first time in the history of Pakistan, and even the 360 years history of that particular Sufi shrine, where we entered 2 years ago through the Book of Psalm. And they told me that was in the 360 years history, we were the first Christian group who engaged with Sufis and all Muslims. And we didn't take back doors, we didn't take windows, we didn't take anything hidden. We went through the front door from the top leadership, and you can see that while I'm sitting in the floor, in the courtyard with the other, all TV cameras and different channels, they were there interviewing me what I'm doing here. In front of cameras. And then article published the right next day in different local newspaper that what we were doing over there and how we were trying to engaging Muslims and creating a peace building and a religious harmony with them. Yes.
And after that performance, we have visited the radio station.
Yeah.
In the morning there.
Yeah. So there, it's interesting. After my visit, I was out of country. Then we received another invitation. Would you please come again at the annual festival of this Sufi and the mystics? We are celebrating 368th birthday. And would you bring your group again? And then our group was there. I was not in country that one, but we engaged all these our group. And they went through, and you can see there were, I think, almost Nigel, you can see Nigel was here. A small corner. Yeah. Or also there. How many people would be there?
More than 12 or 13,000 all Muslims. Only our team were Christian, those who were on a stage.
It was the first time that the band with guitars and like in different style performing.
So these were the local now channels. How can we use media and these channels to go over there? And then that was a picture from 2 years ago from our annual Psalm Festival. But also we have produced some albums also. Through these albums we engage with different Muslims and Christian and Muslim artists and their bands. So what's next? What are other things which we can use locally and indigenously to engage with Muslims? Number one, there are Christian TV channels now. Because of the freedom of media in Pakistan, from a decade ago, lots of private channels comes out. And there are a couple of 3 or 4 Christian TV channels, satellite TV channels, 24/7 they are working in Pakistan. And also there is an open Christian festival, an open area. Brother Samuel was engaged with a couple of open air big festivals, prayer festival and evangelism festival in Pakistan for Christians, but also they attract also Muslims. Lots of Muslims come to attend this open air festival. How many people were last time when you were there?
Well, a couple of years ago, Marilyn Hickey was there and she had a big crusade, so that was about 80,000.
80,000 people, right in the middle of the city.
Last year, our local pastor, Pastor Anwar Fazal, he's a owner of the largest Christian TV station. So he had a crusade in Karachi, and that was about 180,000 to 200,000 people gathered in one place.
So you can imagine that there is a potential, highly potential, with the local indigenous mission style. And then there is another force which I'm trying to reaching out and prepare to use, and that is 80% music teachers in the Muslim schools, private school chains, 80% music teachers are Christians. It's a big force over there. We just need to integrate them, train them, equip them, and to give them techniques and ideas. And for some reason, I had experience of 9 years working, and my 3 album of children's songs, which I produced, I composed right over there, which I use. I will show you one of the brief video. Then Workplace Witness is there. So what's next? I would like to challenge here in the North American churches. You can find out first of all, you don't need to fear to the Muslims, number one. You need to engage with them to reduce the heat, because they have been misguided, their mind have been washed against Christianity through the clerics, the Muslim clerics, and their historical distorted history about Christian. So how we can create a bridge by engaging them? If we will not engage with them, the picture which have been created in their mind, that we cannot change that picture. So first of all, we need to engage with them. Don't need to worry. Second thing is that we talk about revival and renewal. I want to say that we need to re-Bible the Western culture. In our context, everything started in a publicly or in a government level with the recitation of the Quran. In the school, reading and reciting Quran is compulsory. And here, Bible has vanished from your schools and the public places. First, we need to bring back Bible. We need to re-Bible our culture and our society. So, and then automatically when you will re-Bible, it will follow by the revival and then the renewal. It will automatically come. So I would like to show one of our children song, which I found just today. Somebody, it's interesting because I have composed lots of album and song, 4 albums and then the children's song. Sometime I found my own song somewhere, somebody else posted and they said, oh, this is a good resource, and then, oh, this is my song, I produced that. So just today morning I found another song at a YouTube which somebody has posted on my page or in their page, and I was tagged, oh, wonderful resources on children's song. I said, oh, really? I click and my song appeared. So I would like to show you. This is a story of seed sower. from our last album, which I produced as a Miracles and Parables of Christ. So that song is written and composed by me. And music arranged by a Muslim musician, the music arranger, yeah. So now you can see how we use local channels to engage and share their story. You can understand what's coming next without subtitles. So that's the story of our seed sower. Any question?
So the animation for that, then, is that you just hired somebody, or is there people that do the animation?
I tell you an interesting thing. Here, everything is copyright. You know, people want their signatures, everything. It's a kind of a business. I know that's fine, fits in your culture. We are, as time-free zone, we are copyright-free zone. So that's why I found my songs somewhere else. Somebody edited, used pictures, and put on a YouTube. Never asked me. And I don't care about that. Yeah, because there is no tax on the air which God has given. There is no tax on a breathing. There is no tax on a sunrise. Sunrise. So I believe that Jesus said that you have been given free, so you distribute free. That's how we do. So we don't worry about copyright. That's the answer. Who did? Why did? I don't care about. They are listening word of God and they are using this. That's enough for me. Any other question?
Yeah, in our Sunday school, in our church, thank Lord, is the largest Pentecostal church in Karachi, and in our Sunday school program is a big program. You know, this song is very well known and all the kids know it. I didn't know it was Eric's song. that's new for me too. That's good to know.
Yeah, even Dr. Emily sometime told me, why are you not copyright? I said, well, copyright is not my job. My job is only to write song and compose and distribute to the church, to the body of Christ. That's my job only. And I end there. Anybody else?
I hear the Bollywood influence.
Oh yeah, this is for kids actually.
Yeah,
you know? Yeah.
Yeah,
so you have to do something.
I was really convicted by the Read Bible.
And
to know that he grew up learning this in his family context and learning from the heart, not needing a book, which I still need so much of. That's a challenge to North American churches to instill songs from the Bible, the Psalms, to memory in our families as well as our churches.
Yes, Nigel?
Can you open my center?
Okay, Nigel wants you to see his recent one song. Yeah. Yes, come, show me. Nigel is also very popular on YouTube.
What's your last name, Nigel?
Nigel
Bobby. B-O-B-B-Y? Yes. Oh, okay. That's okay. Even we North Americans might have
a Okay, so you can see now, Nigel, N-I-G-E-L, and B-O-B, oh yeah, here you got it. Nigel, where are you?
Come down.
Okay, write your full name. Okay, that's Nigel Bob. Okay.
Bob Carlyle.
Yeah, there are lots of videos by Nigel. Nigel, which one you would like to show? This one?
You can open this one. My picture is there.
This one?
Under this one.
Yeah, this one.
Yeah.
Shaka Jeevan.
It's open on the channel.
Yeah, this one. Okay, channel.
You can play anyone.
Ruhe Khuda. So Ruhe Khuda means the spirit of God.
And it's the title song of it.
This is the title song of the album. Yes.
Yeah.
Bollywood influence.
Yes.
पाक खुदावंदा आ मुझ में तू बस जा ए रूहे पाक खुदावंदा आ मुझ में तू बस जा मेरे पापों को कर दे मुझसे जुदा मेरे पापों को कर से जुदा रहूं तेरी हुजूरी में है ये दुआ रहूं तेरी हुजूरी में है ये दुआ
Thank you very much. I think we are out of time.